Recorded live.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Talking Twilight Zone.
You open this door with the click of a mouse. Beyond it is a world of sound, thought, and opinion. In-depth discussions of television's greatest blending of science, superstition, imagination. And you're invited along. We'll be talking Twilight Zone.
Ho, ho, ho. Hello, everybody. Yes, this is Talking Twilight Zone, and we're here today, our post-Christmas show. And I'm here with my co-hosts, Robert and Bobby, and our very, very loyal listener, and you might as well be a co-host, Rick Wall. Hello, everybody.
Howdy.
Hello.
Hello, and hello, Mr. Ham Sandwich.
Yes, Robert's enjoying the ham sandwich. I think we're all going to be enjoying ham for a few days. I hope everyone had a wonderful Christmas. Bobby and I had a good Christmas. And luckily, we had some fairly decent weather, a little rain here and there, but it was still pretty nice. And today, it's warm. I don't know if it's warm where you guys are. Rick, is it warm there?
50-some odd.
Uh-huh. Yep, same year. How about you, Robert?
Yeah, about 50.
Yeah, very unseasonable, and I like it. I like it a little warmer. But, so I hope everyone had a great Christmas. And as I said, it's our post-Christmas show, and we're doing two episodes today.
Wow, two for a price of one. That's a bargain.
Two for the price of one, man.
But that's besides the point.
Got to give the people what they want. Okay, well, our first episode is called Queen of the Nile, and I'm going to turn it over to Robert for the opening clip.
And now, Mr. Serling. Jordan Herrick, syndicated columnist whose work appears in more than 100 newspapers. By nature a cynic, a disbeliever, caught for the moment by a lovely vision. He knows the vision he's seen is no dream. She is Pamela Morris, renowned movie star, whose name is a household word and whose face is known to millions. What Mr. Herrick does not know is that he has also just looked into the face of the Twilight Zone.
Face of the Twilight Zone. God, I love Rod Serling's narrations. He's so cool. But, yes, this is Queen of the Nile, and it's about a columnist named Jordan Herrick. And he's preparing to interview the famed actress Pamela Morris, who is known for her vitality and her beauty. And a lot of people want to know the secret to how she stays so young and beautiful. So the housekeeper lets him into her mansion, and he proceeds to examine a painting of her that's dated 1940. Then he turns and he sees her swimming in the pool outside. So he goes outside to greet her, and she looks just as she did in the painting. So an old woman approaches Pamela, and Pamela scolds her by saying, "Didn't I tell you to stay in your room?" And the old woman responds that she doesn't want to see her do it again, and then she leaves. So Pamela just blows it off, and so does Herrick, and she's very charming to him, and over coffee, he asks her age. And, of course, she keeps evading the question. And then the old woman returns. And Pamela introduces her as her mother, Mrs. Draper. Herrick says he'd like to interview her. And Pamela says, no, she's old and her mind wanders. You don't want to interview her. So the interview ends shortly after that with a very flirty Pamela giving Herrick a kiss and agreeing to see him later for dinner. So as he's leaving, Mrs. Draper meets him outside and she warns him not to come back. And he asks her Pamela's age, and Mrs. Draper says she doesn't know. She says that Pamela Morris is her mother. She's Pamela's daughter. And he seems totally skeptical. Well, of course, why wouldn't he? So he and Pamela go to dinner that night, and he tells her what her mother said, that her mother said she was actually her daughter. And Pamela explains that her mother is mentally disturbed and ignore whatever she tells her. So after the date, Herrick calls the editor of the newspaper he works for, and he asks him to research the film Queen of the Nile, which was Pamela's first film. And the editor tells him that there have been two films by that name. The first was a silent movie that was filmed in Egypt, and it ended in tragedy. A tomb caved in near the end of the shooting, and it killed the leading lady, Constance Taylor. Well, the editor describes Constance as having been an ageless beauty and real femme fatale. So Herrick asks the editor to find photos of both actresses, and the editor says they look exactly alike. So Herrick asks a few other questions based on things that Pam said, trying to find out her real age, and he asks the editor to dig up newspaper clippings on every man Miss Morris has ever dated. And in the next scene, Mrs. Draper, supposedly the mother, is going through the newspaper clippings and assures him that everything the editor told him is true. She begs him to leave, never come back. Then Pamela comes in, and she interrupts the conversation, and she dismisses her mother, and the housekeeper walks in, she dismisses her, and then she drops something into Herrick's cup. Herrick drinks the coffee, and she says, "What do you want from me?" And he says, "Just the truth." And she says, "You shall have it." And she goes and fetches a small container from behind an Egyptian-style statue. And when Pamela returns to Herrick's side, he's sweating and he's weakening. And she opens the container, and now we see that there's a scarab beetle inside of it. He asks what it is. She says it's the secret of eternity. And she got it from the pharaohs who never understood, or who did understand its power. So Herrick is getting more and more ill. And she said, "I told you, Mr. Herrick, I was once the Queen of the Nile." He slumps unconscious on the living room floor. Pamela applies the beetle to Herrick's chest. Beetle pulls the youth from him, ages him until he dies and turns to a skeleton. And then a few minutes later, he turns to dust. She then puts the scarab on her own chest, and she seems to rejuvenate.
And then ain't got nobody. Nobody.
Good for me. And then the episode ends with yet another young and handsome columnist arrives to interview her again, starting the cycle all over again. And in the closing narration, it is hinted by Rod Serling that Pamela Morris is actually Cleopatra the VII, and she's continued to live for more than 2,000 years. Oh, yeah. Must be nice. Well,
Lynn, there seems to be a reoccurrence with these three episodes for some reason, from Agnes with Love, Spur of a Moment, and now Queen of Nile. It seems to be a repetition situation, like, you know, with the Agnes one, the computer, whoever's running the computer, they go crazy and lead to ruin the next
person
comes in. Spur of a Moment, she keeps reliving. Queen of Nile, victim, and then you get another victim, so.
And then you get the next victim coming in. It is repetitious. Well, you know, in true female fashion, Pamela, you know, she doesn't want to divulge her age. You know, she's trying to come on to this guy. He's very charming. You know, all he wants to do is a story on her. And her mother, you know, she's not very cordial to him, but why should she be? She's not her mother. She's her daughter. And the daughter hasn't aged too well, has she? You know? But, yeah, she has. The problem is that it's her mother, and Pamela is the one who hasn't aged. You know, Pam lies about her age, you know, and she was just a few steps from tearing, you know, her clothes off for him. I mean, she was, like, falling all over him. But the mother/daughter, she tries to spill the beans to Mr. Herrick. She warns him to stay away, and this foolish boy just simply wouldn't do it. He let Pam convince him that mom was wacko, and he succumbs to her charms. He eventually finds out the truth, doesn't he? She kills him with a beetle. Ho-hum, enter the next reporter. Revolving door in her house, it looks like, you know? Charles Beaumont wrote this episode. It was the final episode he wrote for The Twilight Zone. But as was the case with many of his later stories, he was only there in name, really. I mean, he basically used to ghostwriter. Jerry Saul wrote the script. But Beaumont, he wrote season one's Long Live Walter Jameson. So, you know, it is easy to see the similarities. But I can forgive the case of stealing in this case in light of Beaumont's failing health. He was very ill. But both episodes, I thought this episode and Jameson, they used a great depiction of the rapid aging and disintegration of a body at the end. I just really like that, where they show that slow motion thing of the body turning to a skeleton and then the dust. But, you know, the series has been rehashing episodes for a while now. Some are okay, some aren't. And this wasn't the worst rehash I've seen. It's not great, but it wasn't the worst. I thought the acting was fairly good. I thought Anne Blythe was a little over the top, but I think she was supposed to be that way in this role. And Jordan Hurick, I always liked him. He's been in a lot of things, and, you know, he played the reporter. And he's also in, he was in season four's Passage of the Lady Anne. He played the male lead role in that. But Pamela Morris and Walter Jameson would probably have made a great couple. They could have lived forever together. You know, that would be the ultimate everlasting love. But I'm going to rate this one 1.5 for decent acting and pretty good effects. And I'm going to turn it over to Robert.
Okay, thank you, Lynn. Yeah, I definitely agree with you. This is a rehash of Long Live Walter Jameson from season one. And we get that line, "How old are you really?"
Mm-hmm.
As we did in the other one. And, of course, the still pictures from the movies that were shot in the 20s and 40s. And then the Jameson episode, we get the Civil War picture of him in the book that him and the professor were looking at. We also get the repeat towards the end of the disintegrating body. And then the turning into dust as we see in vampire movies. And then Jameson's episode, we get a bullet that causes death, which makes you wonder, you know, how did he survive all those years without any incidents? But, you know, it would have been nice if the mother had helped the daughter out by de-aging her a little bit. And it makes you wonder, too, that it might have been times where she couldn't get, you know, men victims. Maybe she used some of her... you know, from aging from her youth from her daughter to live.
I never thought of that. That's a good point.
Yeah.
You mean the mother / daughter.
Yeah.
Taking some of her life out of her.
Used the beetle during the time she couldn't get any victims. Probably took some of the aging from her daughter just to survive on.
That's good. I never thought of that.
So you think of it, it is a vampire. She's kind of vampiric in a way because she's using the beetle as the focal point to keep her alive. It's not
real
Gray, where with the Dorian Gray, he says something that causes a curse on his portrait, and then, you know, he stays youthful while his portrait ages. It's not really that way. It's more vampiric episode, and that's why I said the Walter Jameson one very much reminded me of, you know, vampire type movies with him, just in youth aspect of it. I mean, it was okay. It very much felt like a mini movie in a sense. The whole thing, you know, was she Cleopatra or wasn't she? Which she kind of doesn't come out right and says she was Cleopatra, but I think she kind of hints that, you know, she was, so. And, I mean, you know, the death scene's been there, done that. You know, I also got reminders of a short drink from a certain fountain that we
reviewed
a few episodes ago. Yeah. So I give it a 1 for the story, and I give it 1 for the death scene. So I give it a 5 for the story.
Okay. Actually, I'm going to turn it over to Rick before I turn it over to Bobby.
Okay.
Well, I'm
going to
let Rick go.
Actually, I kind of liked it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. It's like a lot of the other episodes, a few episodes, I should say, yeah. But if something works, Why change it? I'm kind of mixing apples and oranges here, but when I was in college, I wrote a story. I was taking a sports psych class, and I wrote an article for the paper, an interview actually of our coach, who used the same play four times, and I asked him why. And he said, well, they didn't stop us the first time. There was no guarantee that they'd stop us any other, the other time that I used it.
That's a good point.
You know, like I said, if something works, why change it? The effects were surprisingly, to me, pretty damn good, especially at the end of the series, where they were really getting crappy. Having said all that, I'd give it a 2.
Okay, good. Great. Yeah, I gave it a 1.5. I'm sorry, Robert, would you give it a 1 or a 1?
No, I give it 2. I give it 1 for
a
story, 1 for the death scene, yeah.
2, okay. So, a 2 from you, right, Rex? Yeah, okay, great. Okay, Bobby?
Okay, I'll be honest about it. I have nothing more to say about either one of these episodes. It was all I could do to even write about them. So, you know, if I remember correctly, I gave it a 1. I have no idea why. This is just, you know, it's more season 5 garbage as usual. And instead of talking about that, I'd rather remind people that the annual New Year's Eve, New Year's Day Twilight Zone Marathon, as I posted at our group site yesterday, will be on next week. It begins on New Year's Eve at 8 o'clock in the morning, where most people who work during the day won't get a chance to see it at all. And I post, you can find the schedule of episodes at the Sci-Fi channel, for those people who get it. And you can find the list at their website, and I also posted it on the board at the Twilight Zone Revisited and Reviewed. And I just want to make a few comments about it, because as usual...
When does it end? It starts at
30? It ends on Friday at 6 o'clock in the morning.
New Year's Day. Okay.
So it runs all of New Year's Eve and all of New Year's Day. As usual, it's a mixed bag. There are classic episodes in there, and there's a lot of trash in there, too. It starts at 8 o'clock in the morning with a rather odd choice, The Old Man in the Cave. I mean, that's a decent episode, but I wouldn't necessarily start it there. Unfortunately, it goes from there right into Caesar and Me, an absolutely dreadful episode, so I would never put that in second place. From there, on that first day during the day, it's just a mixed bag. There's some good things there, some decent things, nothing extraordinary. Nick of Time is on at 2:30 in the afternoon. But like I said, you know, most people won't be around anyway, so it doesn't really matter. Stop Over in a Quiet Town, which we haven't done yet here, will be on at 6:30, and that's a pretty good place for it. That's actually where the decent episodes start. Stopover is on at 6:30, and The Game of Pool is on at 7, and then Monsters Are Due on Maple Street is on at 7:30. Unfortunately, that's followed by The Dummy, another horrible episode. But after that, it does pretty good again. It goes from The Invaders to Deserve Man, and Nightmare at 20,000 Feet, Stop at Willoughby, and The Hitchhiker, all in a row. That's pretty good, pretty amazing for them. At least somebody has a brain over there. And then it gets into the middle of the night, December 31st. I suppose they think they're funny. At midnight, they're showing The Midnight Sun. Isn't that
a good thing? Every year. They do that every year. Every year for the marathon, at midnight, they show The Midnight Sun.
But there are some episodes that are on in the, early in the morning when most people will be drunk and passed out. The after hours will be on at 1 o'clock in the morning. I can't imagine anybody being alive for that. And Night Call will be on at 1:30 in the morning. You know,
I'll be up,
but I mean, a lot of people are going to be drunk. After that, and probably the most egregious thing is to put The Hunt on at 3 o'clock in the morning. I mean, really.
I love that episode.
You can't put that on in the middle of the day. Give me a break.
They should put The Mask on right after The Midnight Sun.
Well, it's in here. We just haven't gotten to it yet. But
they put The Mask on after The Midnight Sun?
I haven't gotten
they
to it.
They should.
They didn't, no. There are, unfortunately, one or two. Is the new exhibit an hour-long episode?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, there's two hour-long episodes. One is Jezebel, which I hate. And that's on at 7 o'clock in the morning. That leads off on New Year's Day when people will be off work and maybe they'll be awake by then. And after that, there are a couple of good things, not too bad. Not unfortunately, at 10:30 is Hocus Pocus and Frisbee, honestly. And then we get into later in, well, in the afternoon, there's really nothing spectacular. It's a Good Life is on at 2:30 in the afternoon. Somebody wanted to get real funny, so at 4 o'clock is Black Leather Jackets. At least I'll get a chance to laugh. And Five Characters Search of an Exit after that. And then it really, I will give them credit for some things, and that is on New Year's Day in primetime hours, they put classic episodes on, but in the late afternoon and early evening, they've got a lot of stuff. They got the Bewitching Pool in there, and that should have been completely rejected. But then at 7 o'clock, it starts in earnest. It starts to get serious. This is on New Year's Day, when they've got Kick the Can on at 7 o'clock and the Mask on at 7:30. And then what we have beginning at 8:30 is possibly the greatest doubleheader in television history, when Living Doll is on at 8:30 and Time Enough to Last is on at 9 o'clock.
Oh,
you can't get
good.
Any better than that. So
oh,
that'll be an hour to remember. Right after that, they go to Where Is Everybody, which if I believe is the first episode of the series. It's kind of strange. And then The Howling Man, and then it picks up again at 10:30 is Eye of the Beholder, and then 11 is The Shelter. Then we get it early in the morning again for a long-distance call, but that's at midnight. And after that, not much. We get to the end, the last three stories, which are on January 2nd, early on Friday, The Last Rites of Jeff Myrtlebank, which I can live without. What You Need, which is okay, and then they end with
Love
the hour-long episode, The New Exhibit. I think it's regrettable. I think it's regrettable
that
the
one about the wax museum.
The regrettable thing is that they didn't put my own personal favorite, which is He's Alive in there. If you're going to do hour-long episodes, we can be thankful for some things. Come Wonder With Me is not on the list. The Sphere is not on the list. And, of course, The Encounter is not on here because that will never be on TV again, thank the Lord. A terribly racist, absolutely horrifying episode has been banished forever. So that's not in here either, and the one with Carol Burnett's not in here. So I'm thankful that, though there are some low moments here, it could have been worse. But I do like, I surely do like the idea of having Living Doll and Time Enough to Last back-to-back. That is quite remarkable. So if there's an hour of TV to watch during the entire year, that's the hour to watch it. So that starts next Wednesday at 8 o'clock in the morning and runs through the next day, Thursday, all day and all night, and into Friday morning.
And that's on the Sci-Fi Channel, right?
That's the Sci-Fi Channel. Oh, also, they're showing our next episode on the show, What's in the Box? Somebody's lost their mind. That's on the Sci-Fi Channel, which I believe most people get. It's not a premium channel, so most people should get it on their campus.
Yeah, I think it's a
problem. I'm surprised they stuck a couple of hour episodes on there.
Two-hour-long, Jezebel and The New Exhibit. Those are the two that they did for an hour.
I wish it
would
have
been
better.
Also mention, as I did on my post, that very early in the morning, of course, they have to have their hour-long infomercial of time.
Mm-hmm.
One's an hour long, one's an hour and a half long, so you can go back to sleep during those because nobody in their right mind would sit through that. And other than that, whatever it is, in spite of the low moments, you know, for once, television comes alive and actually there's a reason to watch it. So we can be thankful for that. Lynn?
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I'll be watching it. I mean, I watch them as much as I hate the way they cut them off and they rip parts out of them. And because I've watched
well, it's
episodes.
Absolutely outrageous because, of course, in network TV, especially in those days, I believe you were allowed 3 minutes worth of commercials, if I'm not mistaken. And on cable now, of course, you can do whatever you damn well please, which I think is really a pity. I think that there should be a government requirement that cable channels not do that. They're letting them get away with murder. They really are. They're making money. And there's complaints all over the Internet from people who are absolutely outraged at what they're doing. They show like 9 minutes worth of commercials, 10 minutes worth of commercials. And you don't get that out of the air. The only way to get that, obviously, is to take out chunks of the story. It's despicable. It really is.
I know. And, you know, somebody like me who has seen every episode a zillion times, you know, and knows most of them by heart, I know every piece of the episode that they rip out. And it drives me crazy when I watch
it. Well, it's like somebody giving you a book as a Christmas present and saying, I'm sorry, but I took out about 30 pages, but you won't miss them. Don't worry about it.
I know. Like
oh, you guys, do me a favor. When you watch The Masks, see if they still cut out that part where he's in the wheelchair and they remove his mask. Cause the last
I can't predict. God only knows what they'll do. I don't know.
They probably will, because I think they cut out the same scenes every year. They have it to where they cut the same.
And that's an important part of the episode.
I know.
Yeah,
I know.
Like what they do with timing off, like when they have it at like 12 o'clock or whatever, you know, when he goes, I didn't have enough time, but, you know, when he's going on, and then they cut it off in the middle.
Well, let me tell you something. I don't know how many people have this channel.
Part.
We have it here.
Yeah,
we have a channel here called Cozy, C-O-Z-Y. And they show so many commercials on their stories that what they've done now, they show a lot of classic sitcoms. What they've done now is they don't show the closing credits at all. The last scene plays, and it fades out, and they go right away into the next show. They've simply taken out the credits. If you want to know who was in it, forget it. You won't find out there. And I just get more infuriated by this every day, because cable TV here costs us over $2,000 a year, and I think it is absolutely awful. It just is. I'm outraged. I remember when cable TV started, and I didn't have it. I wouldn't have it for many years. And I was jealous. I thought to myself, oh, my God, that must be wonderful to have that. And it just it's filled with junk. It's filled with advertising. I've never in my life seen advertising as much as I see now. It's virtually wall-to-wall. And I think it's TV Land. If I'm not mistaken, I think it's TV Land or one of them that is showing the Andy Griffith Show during the day, and it runs 40 minutes. In other words, they're going past the top of the hour. If it starts at 9:30, it really runs till 10 after 10. Why? Because they've got about 15 minutes worth of commercials in it. You've got to see it to believe it. So, you know, I can't predict what they'll take out of it, but you can bet every single one of them will be chopped up. You can depend on that.
Oh, every one of them is chopped up. They take part out of every one. I mean, in The Hitchhiker, there's the one scene where she drives frantically to the diner, and she walks in the diner, and she asks the diner owner if he sees hitchhikers along the highway, and, you know, he tells her no. She gets in her car, and she drives to ends up in a traffic jam, and while she's sitting in the traffic jam, the hitchhiker comes up to her car, and
he looks in the window,
He looks in the window and speaks to her. It's the first time and only time until the end that he speaks to her in that episode. Very crucial scene. They cut that out. They cut the diner scene to where he talks to her out, which is absolutely outrageous. And in Time Enough at Last, they always cut out the scene where he tells his boss that his wife always pulls the newspaper out of his hand at night when he's reading it. Well, the scene they cut out is he's sitting in the chair reading the newspaper, and she comes up and she rips it out of his hand and tells him they're going to go play cards with their friends that night. You know, in about a half an hour, they're going to go play cards, and he's to go change his shirt, and he even makes a little joke there, and then he gets up and he pulls a book out from under the cushion of the chair, stiffs in his shirt. That whole scene's cut out. The entire thing's cut out, and next scene that you see is him walking the door and her pulling his jacket up and pulling the book out. But they don't show the scene that led up to that. So, yeah, I mean, I watch the marathon because I'm a Twilight Zone devotee, but, you know, I just hate that they cut those scenes out.
Yeah, what they do at the end before they start the next episode, they squeeze it down to a box form.
Yeah, you can't read anything.
The one end out. And then they bring up the other box on the right, and then they bring it up full when the beginning starts.
That pisses me off. Yeah, and if you want to read it, if somebody who's never seen The Twilight Zone before wants to read it and see who the actors are or anything, they can't. They rip the whole thing out.
The really outrageous thing about this fact is that they're really shouldn't be any commercials on cable TV. The only channel that, aside from HBO and places like that, is Turner Classic Movies. If you want to watch a movie on TV and you're watching on cable, you only want to watch it at TCM because there's no advertising there at all, and they don't cut out any so-called offensive language, and they don't take out a single solitary second of anything. It's just like watching it on DVD. It's the only channel. I'd like to see them all disappear except for TCM because they don't need advertising. Ted Turner has enough money that he doesn't need advertisers. So that's the place to go if you want to really see a movie or any. They don't show any TV shows, any classic series, which is too bad. But that's the place to go. There's no reason to have all this advertising on cable TV. We're already paying for it. We're already paying for it. You know, I mean, I grew up, you know, I started watching TV in 1953, and it was free. I never would have dreamed in a million years that you'd have to pay thousands of dollars to watch television. Okay, I'm willing to pay the money, but give me something for it. Don't load me up with commercials. I sit here every day, and I'm absolutely outraged, and if anything, it's getting worse. I don't know what's going to happen, but in another 3 or 4 years, there might be half an hour worth of commercials in there. I wouldn't be surprised at all because they're completely out of control, so. If you watch something, watch TCM. If you want to watch a classic series, buy it. That's what you need to do.
I'd hate to be the downer, but this is talking Twilight Zone, not talking cable TV. Cable TV. Let's get on with the next episode.
All right, next episode. Okay, next episode is What's in the Box. Okay, and over to Robert.
And now, Mr. Serling. Portrait of a TV fan named Joe Britt. Occupation, cab driver. Tonight, Mr. Britt is going to watch a really big shoe. Something special for the cabbie who's seen everything. Joe Britt doesn't know it, but his flag is down, his meter's running, and he's in high gear on his way to the Twilight Zone.
Okay. Well, we have Joe and Phyllis Britt, an old married couple in New York City, and they don't get along. And Joe gets home from his job as a cab driver late one night, and Phyllis accuses him of seeing another woman. In the meantime, there's a television repairman in the next room fixing their broken set. So Joe's irritated. He wants to watch some sports show, and he starts harassing the repairman about the inconvenience and the cost. So the repairman abruptly closes the open TV panel, announces the TV is fixed. And then he states, the job is free. So Joe can't believe this. You know, he says the job's free. He leaves, and the TV starts getting Channel 10, which was a station they had trouble getting before. But that station is showing the past, present, and future of Joe and Phyllis's lives. But only Joe can see it. The TV shows that he's seeing are showing him himself seeing another woman. Then they show him killing Phyllis in a fight. And then they show his trial and the conviction for his murder and his execution in the electric chair. They show all this stuff. And after they showed him with another woman, he went and confessed to Phyllis that he had been seeing somebody. And you'd think that she would have said, well, I don't know if I would have been so understanding, but I guess he thought that she would just appreciate him confessing, and she was pretty mad, and she started screaming and yelling and giving him a bad time, and then he ended up running out after her, and he ended up getting in a fight with her and throwing furniture at her, and eventually he grabbed her and he pushed her out a window, and she died. And then the cops come, and then he goes to trial for the murder, and he is convicted, just like the TV predicted. And he gets the electric chair. So, you know, it's just one of those episodes that you have your cursed object, and it told him his past, present, and future. But the funny thing is, as Joe was being arrested by police, he comes face to face with the TV repairman, who asks him to please recommend his services to others. And then the repairman breaks the fourth wall, and he smirks to the audience as Joe's taken away. So, you know, this wasn't exactly that feel-good episode, and it wasn't a scary episode. It didn't even have much of a twist ending. because I think most viewers knew how it was going to end. But it did have that sci-fi aspect. You know, you have the television that showed his life, past, present, and future. And, you know, this premise was also used in season two, A Most Unusual Camera. You know, where you had the camera that could take pictures and predicted what was going to happen in the future. In fact, not only did the camera show the future, just like the television did, but it also had the same ending with the woman everybody falling out of the window and dying. But Joe Britt, you know, he's cheating on his wife. She is pretty obnoxious in a way you can't blame him. And the TV repairman, he's fixing his TV, and he leaves it more than repaired. He leaves it with some special effects. But she already suspects him of cheating. So this was just the icing on the cake. Shows the big brawl between him and Phyllis. He ends up killing her. That's what he predicted. Shows him going to jail. That's what he predicted. And the TV predicted. Shows him getting a chair. That's what he predicted. But the repairman, oh, that guy's freaky. He had a face that only his dog could love because, my God, he is a freaky-looking guy. And the scene where Joe, he punches out the TV screen, and the scenes with Phyllis screaming at Joe with her face in those almost frightening close-ups, that were the most action that this episode got until the last scene where they really get into the brawl and Phyllis is killed. So to be perfectly honest, I didn't really hate this. I didn't, but the two main characters, they were obnoxious and detestable. But the story itself, I don't think it was terrible. And there was definite reworking of other episode ideas and endings, but, you know, I've seen worse. So, you know, I'm going to give it a 2. I'll give it a 2 because I didn't think it was horrible. So, Robert, over to you.
Lynn, didn't the guy that portrayed the TV repairman, didn't he do voice work for Disney?
He might have. He might have, yeah. Because I think I saw something in his... when I looked him up on IMDb, I looked him up somewhere, and he did have something about Disney in his catalog. So yeah,
he was in a lot of stuff in the 60s and 70s.
Was it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I recognize him, but I recognize the voice because I thought maybe he did Piglet or one of the characters in Disney, but
yeah.
Unfortunately, I wasn't too crazy about this episode, and. It kind of followed along the same line of a future movie. This is kind of like the forefather for the movie Pleasantville. Had Don Knotts as the TV repairman, but the only difference between this one and Pleasantville was they got to interact in the TV show itself. But whereas this one, you got to see. What happens in his future. So, I also have the trailer for Pleasantville, so we can play that now.
There's a place where life is simple. People are perfect. And everything is black and white.
Honey, I'm home.
It's a place that's as far from reality as we can imagine.
How about some marshmallow rice squares?
Those are swell.
But maybe it's a lot closer.
You see that?
Than we think.
What happened?
I'm not sure.
Look at me. I'm pasty.
Good morning, kids. Better get a move on or you'll be late for school.
I put blueberries in them just the way you like.
We're in Pleasantville?
No!
We're supposed to be in school.
We're supposed to be in color?
What's all the commotion?
Who's that?
I didn't think you'd want to come here until we'd been pinned for a little while.
You can pin me anytime you want to. Or maybe I should just pin you.
She's a fine young woman. She would never do anything for us to be concerned about.
From the creator of Big and Dave.
What are you doing to these people? You can't do this to them. You're messing with their whole universe.
Maybe it needs to be messed with, David.
Comes a story about the loss of innocence.
I brought you something from the library.
Gee whiz.
And the power of change.
Well, what's outside of Pleasantville?
There's some places where the road keeps going.
Honey, I'm home.
New Line Cinema presents.
Look at my face.
It'll go away.
I don't want it to go away.
Something is happening to our town.
Jeff Daniels, William H. Macy, Joan Allen, Reese Witherspoon, and Tobey Maguire.
So what's going to happen now?
I don't know.
Pleasantville.
What are we going to do, Bob?
Well, we're safe for now. Thank goodness we're in a bowling alley.
I love that last line of the trailer. We're safe. We're in a bowling alley. But, yeah, I like this movie. I like Pleasantville. And so I usually visit once in a while watching it. And it's amazing how they do the TV universe as compared to the reality. And, I mean, it's a good cast. And it was a pretty good movie. There was another one that was like this, too, called Stay Tuned with the late John Ritter. That one wasn't that great. There was some funny moments, especially where they did a scene where Ritter is flicking the channels in the TV world, and they do a take off of Three's Company there.
I never liked John Ritter.
It was
never
funny.
I could stand that guy. I didn't like.
Oh, I like John Ritter.
Did you really? I never liked
him.
There's something about him I just didn't like. Never could and I couldn't stand him in Three's Company. Because the reason I hated that show was all that slapstick comedy, always falling over things, banging the doors, falling over the cast. It was just stupid. I thought it was a stupid show, and I didn't like him.
He was better in movies when he left Three's Company, when Three's Company was canceled, and he went on and did movies, and he did okay in some movies.
I saw him in a couple of things afterwards that he wasn't bad in, but I overall I was never a fan.
He was in Bad Santa, if anybody remember that one. Billy Bob Thornton, he played a manager, I think, in that one, store manager or something. Also, it reminded me of an episode of Friday the 13th series where the cursed object in one episode was a TV. And if you touched it or something to do with the TV, you would die. So, remind me of that. But like you said, Lynn, it was very reminiscent of the camera episode. It brings up a question: was Joe really left to his fate, or could he have changed it if he wanted to?
Yeah.
But the next episode that we review is a lot better than this one. Unfortunately, this was very dry, disappointing, boring. I thought it was a wasted talent for William Demarest, who we remember from My Three Sons and
Yeah.
So I give it a 1 out of 5.
Okay, Rick.
I like the bit where he'd get his wife and all she saw was snow and static and whatnot.
Yeah.
You know, and it makes you wonder: was he actually imagining what he saw? You know, was it a product of his guilty conscience or not? I don't think so much it was a cursed object. I think basically, like I said, I think it was, and since Serling wants to make morality plays, I think it was more a construct of his guilty conscience rather than a quote-unquote cursed object or it actually happening.
So, Rick, was the TV repairman really just the TV repairman, or was he the catalyst?
The catalyst, but I don't think it was a cursed object, and I don't really think it was happening. What he was seeing, I don't think was actually...
It was his conscience.
Yeah.
All in the same mind.
But I'd give it a 1.5.
Okay. All right, great. Okay, Bobby?
It's a dreadful episode. It has no reason to exist at all. It's all about spousal abuse. Another one of those episodes that will never appear on TV today in a million years because nobody thinks it's funny or interesting to see a couple screaming at each other, whether they fall out the window or not. As we've recently seen in the Ray Rice football scandal where he punched out his fiancée in an elevator, nobody wants to be a party to that. This episode is all about that. It's about them just screaming at each other, and I couldn't care less whether they fall out the window, to tell you the truth.
Then, Bob, you don't watch the nighttime soap operas then, do you? Where that's a big thing with Scandal and all these other shows, Desperate Housewives.
No, I've never watched. I wouldn't waste 2 seconds on any of that. Are you kidding me? Nobody hates reality TV more than I do. I think it's absolutely dreadful. This episode, it's like The Encounter. It's outdated, and it's the kind of thing people would never sit through. It's totally ridiculous. It's simply, like Robert said, it's just boring. And you can predict what's going to happen. You pretty much know that it's going to come to that. So, personally, William Demarest made my skin crawl. I couldn't stand him. And when he got on My Three Sons, it was just absolutely dreadful. And, I couldn't stand John Ritter either. And just like Lynn said, I felt the same way about him. So, it's just a bad episode. Again, I gave it a one. It's a mystery why. Sometimes I just don't know what I'm doing, and that obviously was one of those times. So that's it. So thank God we're through with those two. And it's just, it's hell on earth. It's season five. Lynn?
Okay. And, that does conclude those two episodes. But our next episode, which will be January 17th, is it?
17th, yes.
17th. January 17th, just going to take a little hiatus there. Bobby and I have an anniversary coming up on January 8th, and we're going to celebrate that weekend. So we will move the next show up one week. But on January 17th, we're going to do The Masks.
Hooray!
Yay! Yes, one of the classic episodes.
Now,
we
just missed it. It would have been nice if we could have reviewed The Mask today, because it would have been potential to next week, which is New Year's. So.
Oh, yeah. But wait. They were Mardi Gras, right? They were doing Mardi Gras.
Well, yep. It's their version of...
Well, yeah, they were celebrating. Yeah, they were celebrating stuff. Yeah, you're right. Oh, well. But we will do it on the 17th. So I'm looking forward to that one. And hopefully Dave will be back by then. We missed Dave today, but he's probably still out making Murray, which is okay. He's probably enjoying his wine and making Murray. So with that, it looks like our next episode will be in 3 weeks. So I do actually, we all wish everybody a very happy New Year. Hope you all had a Merry Christmas and wish you a very happy 2015. And whatever you do, stay safe and just have a good time. Okay. Well, that's it for today. So happy New Year, guys.
Bye. Happy New Year. Bye.
Rick?
And now, Mr. Serling.
Next on Twilight Zone, we move into New Orleans for the Mardi Gras. And we do it with a vengeance. Robert Keith and Milton Seltzer appear in a bizarre story of men, masquerades, and masks. This is a small shocker to wind up a week. And if it doesn't send you to a psychiatrist, it'll send you at least to a mirror. On Twilight Zone next, The Masks.
Robert, behave yourselves on New Year's Eve.
Yeah, right.
Actually, don't behave yourselves. Have a good time.
I'm going to the Dip.
The Dip?
The Diplomat Hotel.
Hey, awesome. Hey, well, have a wonderful time, guys.
Hey, Linda, forget to press the button.
I'm doing it now. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye, guys.